It's Ian Pickus here in the Congressional Corner with David Hawkins, senior editor of the American Leader, who formerly worked at the Fulcrum and CQ and Roll Call. And David, I don't think it got a ton of attention, but President Biden, after announcing he would leave the presidential race, said, hey, it's time to look at some reforms to the Supreme Court. What did you think?
I thought it was fascinating, in part because when he was a candidate for president, he was not interested in any of those changes. Of course, when he was a candidate for president, his life's work, other than being, of course, vice president for 8 years, had been in the Senate, where he was for a long time the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, had his fair share of Supreme Court confirmations, and seemed said as a presidential candidate that he thought the system was working well as it was. Now, that was so. Several years ago. Gosh, it was 4 years ago. And the Supreme Court has done a lot of things in the subsequent 4 years to put these topics back on the front burner. Not just their rulings, which have diminished the public's faith in the Supreme Court pretty significantly, and made a bunch of voters mad and seemed more political than non-political, which is, of course, is the court's customary posture. So not just their rulings, but also their personal behavior, that particularly, Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito most particularly. So I guess it doesn't surprise me that he's changed his tune. It does surprise me a bit that he's decided to make this a cause of what is essentially a lame duck half a year in office. It's not these proposals are not going anywhere in Congress. The House Republican majority will not unlikely to even bring them up, and I'm not sure it makes strategic sense for the Senate Democrats who run the Senate to bring them up only to have them shot down, because it would require 60 votes to advance past a filibuster on any of these ideas, and of course the Democrats don't have those votes. And all that having been said, I think the public this is going to be a little bit of a case like gun control, where the public overwhelmingly supports the kind of gun control policies that Congress has been talking about, but they go nowhere in Congress because of a fervent opposition. The public increasingly thinks that the Supreme Court has lost its way. They don't trust the Supreme Court to mete out equal justice. And they think that the Supreme Court's ethics are quite suspect. So imposing an enforceable code of ethics on the justices, and then maybe changing, and this, of course, just to emphasize, changing the number of members of the Supreme Court or setting their term limits, that would be done by statute. That's not a constitutional amendment. The number of justices on the court has changed several times, although I don't think since the late 1800s, I think it's been nine for that long, but they could change the number of members and they certainly could set term limits.
Let me ask you about President Biden. You know, it's obviously borderline unprecedented what happened with his reelection bid. But legacy wise, how do you look at him now, knowing that he's coming to the end of many, many decades at the top of American politics?
I think if Kamala Harris wins the presidency, his place in history will be very comfortable. He will go down as a one-term president who did accomplish a considerable amount, and he will be remembered as one of the most. Should be remembered, no matter what happens, as one of the most influential senators legislatively in terms of legislative accomplishment in modern times. If Donald Trump wins the presidency, he will go down in history as the guy who hung on too long and allowed Donald Trump to be reelected. I don't think history will look at that. It will then consider his deciding too long to stick around at the age of 81. When his party was starting to get nervous about him, they will not look on that favorably. So I guess I think his legacy, sort of the lead of his, as a journalist, I guess it's a little bit lugubrious, but you sort of wonder, like, what's the lead paragraph of a guy's obituary going to say? And I think we won't know that until after November 5th.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. So here's a tough one for you. What's this election about?
Keep them coming in.
Yeah. What's this election about? Personalities aside, is that possible? I mean, are there some key issues that you think voters are weighing right now?
Oh, sure. I mean, and I think that there is still anxiety about the economy and a decent amount of anxiety about the economy and the cost of food. I think that there is a solid amount of anxiety about immigration, particularly on the Republican side. I think there is a sizable amount of anxiety about the future of reproductive rights, especially on the Democratic side. So I think those are the big three. I think that the decision, or the I think abortion is absolutely a galvanizing factor for suburban women, for women voters generally, and will motivate them to the polls more than any other issue. And I think immigration will do the same for conservative and rural voters, particularly. And I think the economy for most everyone, because I think even loyal Democratic voters are feeling some of the pinch and are looking for an administration that will, raise up particularly those in the middle, even if it's the expense of those at the most wealthy, and, you know, do things to allow middle-income voters to stay in the game economically.
It occurs to me that Vice President Harris, you know, she's got a tough road to hoe here, because she would love to capitalize on the administration's achievements, but also shed herself from its vulnerabilities. And that sounds like a difficult trick.
I suppose. I mean, I think she shed herself from the biggest vulnerability, which is Joe Biden himself, who, you know, despite what I just said about his legacy, had become, you know, a decisive vulnerability. They were going to lose. I mean, Biden was going to lose. I don't think I'm saying that. You can record that and put it on a save get. He was going to lose. So she has shed herself of that vulnerability. She is now, I think, allowed to and needs to, and in a way that I haven't heard yet. Maybe at the convention this week, perhaps we will hear more meat on the bones of what she would do as president. We have not heard too much detail yet. I think I haven't sort of gotten to this yet, but if she talks about the future, and her opponent Donald John Trump continues to talk about himself and the past, she's going to win. If Donald Trump puts aside his personal grievances long enough to talk about what he would do if he's returned to the Oval Office, he may well yet win.
But he has a really hard time with discipline. So let me end by asking this question. Journalistically speaking, you know, you're someone who's been around a lot of powerful people who are also aged. There's just no two ways around it.
Right.
Did we learn something about how to cover those types of people by looking at what happened with President Biden? I mean, when the Kerr report came out and mentioned that he was kind of old and confused, you know, that was immediately dismissed by the White House as a hit job. I know the Wall Street Journal had a similar report talking to people who'd been in the room with him, who said he's not always got his fastball anymore. And then by the time of the debate, everyone could see it for themselves. Should we be covering such people in a different way going forward?
I think we need to apply the same scrutiny, of course, to people who are young as to are old. I do think the fact that neither Trump nor Biden was willing to comport with past practice by giving comprehensive health records is a problem that the press should be more forceful in trying to get health records going forward. You know, age is a tricky thing because, Of course, you know, cognitively, people age at different rates as well as physically at different rates. And somebody can have their fastball, and I'm sure you and I and most people listening today have had friends or relatives who had their fastball one day, and, you know, 2 weeks later they didn't. So the fastball can go quickly, or it can stay. So it is tough to set general rules. And then, of course, politically, the country's getting older than ever before. Older people vote at a much higher rate than any other age group. So talking about politicians exclusively based on their age can have its challenges.
It's tough. You know, like Bernie Sanders is older than Joe Biden, and they do not appear to be the same in their public appearances. You know,
That's true. That is for sure true. And now that Joe Biden is off center stage and is off the stage, there is an increasing amount of attention being paid to Donald Trump's, cognitive work, and whether they're fascinating studies of how his rhetoric has changed in the last 10 years, that he used to, you know, he uses many more shorter words and many fewer words. Is that a sign? Is that something he's done intentionally, or is that a sign of cognitive change? I don't know. But, yes, people, you're right. Somebody who's 81 can act way younger than somebody who's 77 or not.
And we have, you know, Chuck Grassley running for re-election. You were there when Strom Thurmond was in his late 90s and casting votes.
Senator Robert Byrd at 100, right?
Yeah.
Some of them, you know, senators who are elected, 6 years is a long time in an older person's life. A lot can happen between when you're, you know, 76 and 82. So asking the public for another 6-year contract when you're of that age, is risky, but I think the alternative, you know, my own view is term limits are a terrible idea, age limits are a terrible idea. The public just needs to become more involved and more engaged and decide that, ideology aside, maybe this person, as you say, doesn't have the fastball and so shouldn't be reelected.
Well, David Hawkins, you still have it. We're going to keep you warming up in the bullpen for the next round on the Congressional Corner. He's senior editor of the American Leader and formerly worked at the Fulcrum and CQ and Roll Call. David, we'll catch up before the big day in November. And thanks as always for doing this.
Thanks so much, Ian.